It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Kurds claim another victory against the Islamic State in Syria. Kurdish-led forces have captured more territory from the Islamic State group in northern Syria. Backed by U.S. coalition airstrikes, the YPG fighters with allied factions claim to have seized the town of Ain Issa. If true, that would put the Kurds about 50 kilometers from Raqqa, the IS self-declared capital of its caliphate in Syria and Iraq. While U.S. defense officials have not confirmed that Ain Issa and a military base have fallen to the Kurds, White House spokesman Josh Earnest Tuesday spoke of Kurdish progress against IS in northern Syria.
This is, I think, an indication of how critically important it is for the United States to have a capable, willing, and effective partner fighting ISIL on the ground.
Kurdish fighters, backed by U.S.-led coalition airstrikes, recaptured the contested town of Kobani near Turkey in January and have since been chipping away at IS control in other areas. The Rwandan government denounced the arrest of its intelligence chief in the United Kingdom at the request of Spain, which seeks him on war crimes allegations, as unacceptable and an outrage. Karenzi Karake was detained at London's Heathrow Airport Saturday, is to appear in court Thursday for his alleged role in reprisal killings during the 1994 Rwandan genocide. Jordi Palu is a lawyer representing Spanish and Rwandan victims of the killings.
We are considering international crimes, the five big international crimes. And there's a commitment not only of the British authorities, but of the Spanish authorities and the states considering the international convention.
Rwanda's foreign minister denounced the arrest, saying Western solidarity is demeaning Africans and is unacceptable. This is VOA News. The U.S. hosted China for a seventh strategic and economic dialogue with Vice President Joe Biden Tuesday, saying the world's two biggest economies must learn to work together.
I need not tell you all they're participating. We have a lot of hard work to do, but we have to keep at it day after day after day after day. This relationship is just too important. Not only we depend on it, but the world depends on our mutual success. To put it bluntly, the world is depending on those of you in this room to continue to work through those issues.
Those issues include maritime tensions in the South China Sea and cybersecurity. Referencing competing maritime claims, the vice president said responsible countries adhere to international law and keep international sea lanes open. Treasury Secretary Jack Lew expressed concern about Chinese government-sponsored cyber-enabled theft. China's Vice Premier Wang Yang acknowledged that on some issues, consensus eludes the two countries. The top U.N. envoy to Mali asked the Security Council Tuesday to provide the country with a peace dividend following last week's agreement with Tuareg rebels. Mongdi Hamdi called on the council to quickly approve funds for water, electricity, and schools for Malians. He said reestablishing basic social services is crucial as thousands start to return home.
The peace accord opens prospects for Mali's recovery and long-term perspectives with a view to reversing the setbacks induced by the political and security crisis. Scores of displaced people and refugees are returning home in spite of pressing humanitarian needs.
He said the reconstruction in Mali will be more difficult than destruction, saying ceasefire violations in the north are a stark reminder of the complexity and unpredictability of the security environment. At least 10 more killed, dozens wounded, when a girl detonated explosives Tuesday in a market in the Gujba district of Yobe State, northeast Nigeria. On Monday, a teenage girl killed at least 20 in the Borno State capital, Maiduguri. There were no claims of responsibility, but suspicion has fallen on the insurgent group Boko Haram, which has kidnapped young girls and women and used many of them for attacks in its six-year effort to establish an Islamic caliphate in northern Nigeria. Nearly 700 have died in a heat wave across Pakistan's southern Sindh province as morgues overflow with the dead and overwhelmed hospitals struggle to aid those clinging to life. Most of the fatalities have been reported in Karachi, the country's largest city and commercial hub. The Sindh provincial government issued a state of medical emergency after the electricity grid crashed, causing widespread power outages as the temperature climbed above 43 degrees Celsius. The opposition lashed out at the government, blaming the deaths on rolling blackouts. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, June 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Former Ugandan Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi tells VOA why he wants to be president.
The reason is we are going to have an election after 30 years of government by NRM, and I think there is a general feeling in the country that maybe it's time for change of leadership.
The former Secretary General of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement has been reinstated. Meanwhile, a Kenyan refugee camp expands for more refugees from South Sudan. Liberia watches nervously as Ebola thrives in neighboring countries, and Burundi's government and ruling party boycott UN-led dialogue.
If the government thinks that the dialogue can delay the election in Burundi, that means that Burundi is now not a member of UN, African Union, or is not a member of East African Region.
François Bizimana is the spokesman for Burundi's Independent Opposition Coalition, and U.S. lawmakers introduced a bill to promote access to electricity in Africa. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former Ugandan Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi says it is time for a peaceful transition in Uganda, where President Yoweri Museveni and the ruling National Resistance Movement have been in power for more than 29 years. Mr. Mbabazi earlier this month announced that he will seek the nomination of the NRM and run for president in the 2016 presidential election. He's currently visiting Washington, D.C. and joins us now by phone. Mr. Mbabazi, welcome to Washington and to Daybreak Africa.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You have announced, Mr. Mbabazi, your intention to run for president. First of all, why do you want to be president of Uganda?
The reason is we are going to have an election after 30 years of government by NRM, and I think there is a general feeling in the country that maybe it's time for change of leadership.
So what is it that you will do differently? Because after all, you have been a member of the NRM for much of your life, I will say. And some Ugandans might wonder, they might see you as a kind of a old wine in a new bottle.
Yes. You know, as I said in my statement, when I made that declaration, the NRM has performed very well in the last 30 years. It obviously has been a success story. There is no doubt about it. But, you know, James, the Bible says there is always time for everything. We've had the leadership, which has led us well all this time. And there comes a time when there will be change. In my view, in light especially of the history of Uganda, and in light of the successes that we have registered, it is reasonable for people to expect the continuation of that success, even as they desire change. So my offer will be to lead that process of changeover. And the theme of my presentation is that this coming election is about the future, making Uganda work for everyone.
You have been quoted as saying that you would like to associate with everyone, including even the opposition, if it will bring about unity to solve Uganda's problems. Would you be willing to join the opposition, let's say, if you fail to get the nomination of the NRM?
My point all along has been that Uganda now is at a stage where we need the effort of everyone. Nobody should be left behind for us to achieve the objective of takeoff.
So have you had talks with anyone in the opposition about the possibility of coming together and bringing about this consensus or what?
Well, we have always been talking. You know, we are not enemies. I don't consider myself an enemy of the opposition. And certainly they should not consider me their enemy.
Mr. Mbabazi, the opposition in Uganda has been crying for electoral reform for many years now. For example, the need for a new electoral commission, one that is not, according to them, not appointed by President Museveni, and the whole issue of government control of the media. I wonder, what's your view?
Obviously, we need reforms in our electoral laws. These are necessitated by the experience we had of the previous elections. Any Democrat would support the idea that where the law is lacking, we should make it better.
Mr. Mbabazi, we do thank you very much for talking with us here on Daybreak Africa.
Well, it's been a pleasure, my brother, and I look forward to talking to you again in the near future.
That was former Ugandan Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi speaking with us by telephone from Washington, D.C. Mr. Mbabazi will be the guest on VOA's television program Straight Talk Africa later today with Chaka Sali. Burundi's opposition parties and civil society groups say President Pierre Nkurunziza wants to turn Burundi into a pariah state by forcing an election despite protests and international outcry. This comes as the government Tuesday boycotted a UN-led dialogue in Bujumbura aimed at reaching a consensus on the way forward. The ruling CNDD and FDD party later said its priority is to the continuation of the election campaign and that the talks are a diversion to disrupt the process. Parliamentary elections are planned for June 29 ahead of the presidential vote on July 15. François Bizimana, a spokesman for Burundi's Independent Opposition Coalition.
The explanation given by the ruling party and other political parties, it is not a good explanation. But because now we have a government and the policy of the government in a conflict resolution, the solution is engaging dialogue. If the ruling party boycotts that dialogue, the rest is history. It means that the government is not supported by the ruling party. And when a government is not supported by a ruling party, as I say, the rest is history.
The ruling party, CNDD-FDD, says it wants to focus on the elections, the parliamentary election for June 29, and then the presidential election for July 15. That's what it wants to do. It sees the dialogue as, kind of a diversion that is aimed to disrupt the elections.
That is irresponsible because the government attended a meeting in Dar es Salaam and in Johannesburg. And the main recommendation, well, that the stakeholders in elections in Burundi must get a consensus on the calendar of the elections in Burundi. And if the government thinks that the dialogue can delay the election in Burundi, that means that Burundi is now not a member of UN, African Union, or is not a member of East African Legislative Assembly, as I told you yesterday, because Burundi is part of those organizations which say that they must be, first of all, a consensus on a calendar of elections.
So what is going to happen now? Are we likely to see more protests? Because now the president says he's going to focus on election.
I think there is no need to protest now because the problem in Burundi now is known all over the world by the United Nations, by European Union, by African Union, by East African Community. I think Burundi or political parties in opposition of Burundi, they don't need now to protest because the issue is known all over the world.
François Bizimana is the spokesman for Burundi's Independent Opposition Coalition. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. Today's Wednesday, June 24th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. In South Sudan, former political detainee Pagan Amum is a step closer to being reinstated as Secretary General of the ruling Sudan People's Liberation Movement, SPLM Party. The National Liberation Council, which is chaired by President Salva Kiir, announced on Tuesday that it was revoking last year's decision to remove Mr. Amum from the key party post. Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
With this, I would like to inform you that the NLC has revoked the decision, and what are left now are technical procedures for Pagan Amum to fully assume his office as the Secretary General of the SPLM. This is good news for South Sudan. This is good news for the SPLM members and the entire region and the international community.
That was Akol Paul, the acting spokesman of the SPLM. He briefed journalists at the State House shortly after the National Liberation Council voted to reinstate Amum in his post as Secretary General of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement Party, or SPLM. Paul says an agreement signed earlier this year in Arusha, Tanzania, to reunify the SPLM calls for Amum to be reinstated. Reunifying the party is seen as a key step toward finally reaching a peace deal at the slow-moving peace talks in Addis Ababa, led by regional bloc IGAD. Paul says Pagan's reinstatement in the key party post is an important step toward reunifying the SPLM, which is splintered into factions when South Sudan erupted in violence nearly 19 months ago.
Today we are united. No more SPLM former detainees. No more talk about G10 and no more talk about FDs. This is one Sudan People Liberation Movement under Comrade Salva Kiir Mayardit.
Amum and around a dozen other party officials were detained shortly after fighting broke in Juba on December 15, 2013. The group of party cadres was accused by Mr. Kiir of plotting to oust him in a coup. Most of the detainees were released to the custody of Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta after several weeks in detention, but Amum and three others were held for 4 months and eventually appeared in court on treason charges. In February last year, a presidential decree read out on state television said Amum had been fired from the Secretary General position by Mr. Kiir. When Amum appeared before South Sudan's High Court on treason charges last year, he said Mr. Kiir sacked him because of his calls for transparency and accountability in the SPLM. Amum's treason hearings began in March last year. Around a month into the hearings, South Sudan Justice Minister Paulino Wanawila ordered the High Court to stay proceedings against Amum and the three others appearing in court with him. Wanawila said the government had decided not to continue with the case against the four, quote, for the purpose of promotion of dialogue, reconciliation, and harmony among the South Sudanese people, unquote. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The United Nations is expanding the Kakuma refugee camp in northern Kenya to accommodate the influx of refugees fleeing violence in South Sudan. As Hilary Hula reports from Nairobi, nearly 50,000 people have fled to Kenya over the past year and a half.
It was once home to the so-called lost boys fleeing war in what was then a united Sudan. Now, the sprawling refugee camp in Kakuma, Kenya, is set to grow once more to accommodate the swelling population of South Sudanese escaping their new country's civil war. UNHCR spokesman Emmanuel Nyabera says that before the conflict erupted in 2013, thousands of refugees were being repatriated and the camp was shrinking.
For a while, we thought that the population of refugees was going down, but then the new conflict that started in 2013 changed the landscape. Since then, we've had almost 50,000 new arrivals. So we have to prepare ourselves to make sure that we decongest the camps in Kakuma.
Nyabera says the camp, currently home to around 180,000 refugees, is now well over its capacity. The planned new site should be able to accommodate 80,000 people, many of whom will be moved from the current site to relieve overcrowding. There are around 17 nationalities in Kakuma, says Nyabera, including Somalis, Eritreans, and Congolese refugees. But South Sudanese now make up the majority. For some, this isn't their first stay in Kakuma refugee camp. Many had been repatriated, only to flee again once the newest conflict began. South Sudan's war has pitted forces loyal to President Salva Kiir against rebels supporting former Vice President Riek Machar. Despite several failed peace deals, the violence has escalated. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, recently reported that at least 129 children were killed in a government offensive last month, and rights groups have accused both sides of atrocities against civilians. Hilary Hewler for VOA News, Nairobi.
Of the three West African countries hardest hit by the Ebola outbreak, Liberia is the only one to be rid of the virus completely, but people are still getting sick in neighboring Guinea and Sierra Leone, and Liberians are worried that Ebola could make a comeback. Chris Stein reports.
Liberians greeted the World Health Organization's announcement last month that it was rid of Ebola with prayers, song, and celebration. But the virus has yet to be beaten in neighboring Guinea or Sierra Leone. Health authorities announced this week that two people had come down with the disease in Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown. The virus's endurance has people in Liberia worried. The three hardest-hit countries are uniformly poor, and the borders between them are little more than a line that is regularly crossed by traders and townspeople. Amegu Siko Kamara lives in the town of Harbel, outside of Liberia's capital, Monrovia, and says he is worried cross-border commerce could bring the virus along with it.
Most of our Liberians that do not have the means of going down to China and other places, they are using Guinea as a close venue to go and buy their goods to come and sell. So definitely we all have to be afraid.
Liberian health authorities say they are training people at the border and giving them thermometers to prevent the disease from making it across. Tolbert Nyansua is the head of Liberia's Ebola Incidence Management Team.
We are still doing our cross-border surveillance exercises, still going on. Across the border, we're training BIM officials, providing thermometers.
But some think the government should do more. Arthur Blackie, who also lives in Harbel, thinks the border should be closed until Liberia's neighbors are free of the disease.
Border is porous and people can be coming from different directions. You can monitor in the night, they slick in and go back. And so I think government need to close the border so that we on the side can be safe.
The virus has killed more than 11,000 people in the region since the Ebola outbreak began in late 2013. Chris Stein for VOA News, Dakar.
Four U.S. lawmakers have introduced a bipartisan legislation to promote access to electricity in Africa. The bill establishes a U.S. strategy to support affordable and reliable electricity, which they say is a must in order to improve economic growth, health, and education in Africa. VOA's Mariama Diallo talked with Tom Hart from the nonpartisan anti-poverty group One Organization, who explained what this could mean for Africa.
U.S. Representatives Ed Royce, Elliot Engel, Chris Smith, and Karen Bass introduced the legislation Tuesday to help modernize sub-Saharan Africa's power structure and increase access to electricity. Tom Hart, the One Campaign's executive director in the U.S., applauds the legislation and says getting energy in Africa is essential.
7 out of 10 people in Africa have no access to electricity. And in rural areas, it's 9 out of 10. I mean, just imagine, you know, you can't refrigerate a vaccine, you can't study for an exam after dark. So many people have to cook and heat their homes by burning wood and other things inside their homes, releasing toxic fumes, let alone running a business.
Representative Chris Smith, the chairman of the House Africa Subcommittee and one of the sponsors of the bill, says these activities are usually taken for granted by many people, including him. He says this bill makes it more likely that millions of Africans can achieve the modern health and economic benefits of the 21st century. Hart explains what the legislation aims to achieve.
Access to electricity for the first time, 50 million. We're also trying to get at least 20,000 megawatts of new power on the continent, and that's distributed both in urban and rural areas. Very important to help get people who have no access at all in remote places where most people live.
Last summer, President Barack Obama announced Power Africa, an initiative with similar goals. Hart says this bill and the president's initiative will complement each other.
The bill would make permanent the president's initiative. We don't want to see this very, very good initiative from the president go away when he leaves office. Presidential initiatives and presidential leadership are critical, but equally important to making sure this lasts a long time and is successful is having both Republicans and Democrats on board. And that's what has been achieved through the introduction of this legislation.
He says the electricity bill is also a complement to AGOA, the African Growth and Opportunity Act. You can't do trade unless products are made, and the lack of electricity is a major impediment to Africa trading with the world, he expressed. In Washington, Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
It's coming up at 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Margot Wuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Boniface Mkhasa is the new Tanzania Taifa Stars coach. The Tanzania Football Federation president, Jamal Malinzi, told the media in Dar es Salaam on Tuesday. A former Tanzanian international player, Mkhasa, takes over from Dutchman Matt Norge, who was sacked following five consecutive matches in which Taifa Stars were defeated. Meanwhile, Argentina's football icon, Diego Maradona, has declared his intention to stand for the FIFA presidential elections. A prominent journalist from Uruguay, Victor Hugo Morales, revealed in Buenos Aires, Argentina on Tuesday. Maradona is the second former player and coach after Brazilian Arthur Antunes Coimbra, popularly known as Zico, declared his vying for the FIFA presidency. Liberia Football Association head Musa Bility has also stepped forward to seek football's highest office. The immediate challenge for all three will be to win support from national bodies in all five continental federations to validate their nominations for the FIFA presidential elections. Interest in the FIFA job is gathering pace after incumbent Sepp Blatter disclosed earlier this month that he's stepping down from office. This is at a time FIFA is suffering a serious image crisis and faces an unprecedented investigation into alleged corruption and scandal by the public authorities of the United States of America and Switzerland. In rugby news, Nigeria seek to get their campaign back on track when they play Zimbabwe in the 15-a-side Confederation of African Rugby Division 1C Africa Cup in Lusaka, Zambia, today, Wednesday. The earlier on lost 15-8 to Zambia. Turning to athletics, Nigeria's top home-based athletes compete at the Athletics Federation of Nigeria Golden League meet in Kaduna, North Central Nigeria, today, Wednesday. While younger competitors have a final opportunity to prove their ability before the World Youth Championships due in Cali, Colombia next month, the senior athletes are vying to qualify for the World Athletics Championships due in Beijing, China in August. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Wednesday morning, June 24th.
William Koklo from Monrovia, Liberia. I believe the pronouncement by Mr. Musa Bility, the president of the Liberia Football Association, that he is contesting the FIFA presidency is welcoming. And I believe it is about time that Africa take the lead to lead FIFA at this moment and at this time, most especially Liberia, to lead FIFA. Thank you and have a wonderful day.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The United Nations said troops from another contingent of its Central African Republic peacekeeping force are suspected of sexually abusing children. UN spokesman Stephane Dujarric would not name the troops' country of origin, but he said on Tuesday that if the allegations are substantiated, this would constitute a grave violation of UN principles. 14 French soldiers are already being investigated for allegedly abusing children in the Central African Republic last year. That is it for this Wednesday, June 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Marco Ullman, along with all of our engineers, I am James Barton in Washington saying, have a very nice day, Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the Internet at www.voaafrica.com. VoiceAmerica.com.
Hello, this is Sunday Shomari. Join me every Monday for your lighthearted show, Let's Talk. That's right, Monday at 17:30 UTC for interviews, great music, and a whole lot of laughter. Right here at the VOA Africa. Keep it locked. VOA Africa, don't miss.